Welcome to GovInnovator. I'm Andy Feldman. Janda Curry joins us today to discuss early childhood interventions that have been shown by rigorous research to have lasting impacts on people's health and well-being. Here's a clip.
One of the issues with policymakers is that they often fall into the rhetoric of saying, you know, none of the existing programs are working, we still have lots of problems, we still have lots of poor people, and so what we really need to do is develop some completely different approach. And what I would say to that is that there are a lot of programs that are working very well, that have been shown to be cost effective, and that it would be a good idea to expand those things that we know are working.
Janet Curry is a professor of economics and public affairs at Princeton University and the director of Princeton's Center for Health and Well-Being. She's a leading expert on the subject of early childhood interventions, including Head Start. Her recent co-authored survey article in the Journal of Policy Analysis and Management focuses on the early life origins of people's well-being. Janet, thanks for being with us. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
One of the points that you've made in your writing is that the importance of early education is quite well known, but the importance of prenatal and early health is somewhat less well known, but it's been shown by research to be very important as well to adult outcomes. I want to jump right to the topic of existing interventions that target early life health and well-being. What are some of the interventions where the research consensus is strongest in terms of having a positive impact?
Okay, so I think some of the areas where the research is strongest are on WIC, which is the Supplemental Nutrition Program for Women, Infants, and Children, home visiting programs, and early childhood programs. So on WIC, there have been many, many studies basically showing that WIC during pregnancy works to produce healthier infants. And the mechanisms for that are fairly clear. So what WIC does is it gives people access to healthy food and also facilitates their access to good medical care. And those two things together seem to be effective to reduce low birth weight, which is kind of a major sign of poor nutrition in pregnancy. Home visiting programs have also been evaluated pretty extensively, and the most successful ones start when women are pregnant and then continue the home visits through, say, 2 years of age. They also tend to target at-risk women, say, teen moms or first-time moms who are in disadvantaged circumstances, and a lot of what they do, I think, is preventive in the sense that by teaching mothers what to expect from their children, you can intervene to do things like prevent child abuse. Early childhood programs like Head Start or universal pre-K programs have also been subject to some very high quality evaluations, and they show that there are positive effects of those programs, particularly when you do long-term follow-up. There are positive effects in the long term. And the reason why that's interesting is because a lot of the earlier evaluations focused only on IQ scores, and you could show that an early intervention from, say, 3 to 5 would have a positive effect on IQ scores, but those gains tended to fade out after kids left the program. And when you follow them for a long time, what you see is that even though the IQ effect faded out, you still see that the kids are more likely to do things like graduate from high school, more likely to go to college, less likely to be involved in any kind of criminal activity. So that, again, there seem to be these kind of sleeper effects that even if you're not seeing it in the test scores, you're seeing it in the outcomes that we really care about down the road. One other thing I want to mention is public health insurance, which in the U.S. is very topical. And there are a couple of recent studies focusing not just on if I have health insurance today, am I healthier today? Because if you think about it, your health is really something that develops over a period of time. So these studies instead look at the question of, if I was covered by public health insurance when I was a child, am I healthier as I grow up? And there does seem to be some evidence that that's the case. If you have public health insurance, then you're more likely to get treated right away if you have something wrong with you, which will then prevent negative long-term consequences.
I'd like to loop back to one of the topics that you just mentioned, which is Head Start. As you just noted, the gains in children's cognitive test scores tend to fade out after they leave the program, but you argue that there is substantial evidence of the long-term benefits of Head Start. Tell us more about that.
Okay, so the first reason why I think that Head Start is effective in improving long-term outcomes is because there have been several studies using different methodologies that all show that. We now, I think, have a better idea about why that's the case. So, as I said, a lot of the early interventions focused on IQ, and it's actually quite difficult to increase somebody's IQ score. And the older they get, the harder that it is. So after somebody's 6 or 7, we think it's probably not even possible to increase their IQ score. But when they're 4 or 5, it's not that easy either. But we all know, if we think about it, that IQ is not the only thing that's important for somebody to be successful in life. In fact, we probably all know people who are very bright and don't have the other attributes that it takes to be successful. Now, those other attributes, things like being able to take criticism constructively, being able to listen when somebody gives you direction, being able to organize your time, those are all things that can be taught even to adults. Sometimes economists call them non-cognitive skills. Those are things which are addressed by Head Start. You take kids who may be in a very chaotic home situation, you put them in a preschool situation where things are orderly, where you learn to sit in a circle and sing the ABC song or something like that. And what people tend to focus on is, well, did they learn the ABC song? And what they're missing is that being able to sit in the circle and sing the song is also an important skill. And if you can't do that when you go to kindergarten, then you're going to be a problem. You're going to be more likely to end up in special education. You're going to be more likely to ultimately drop out of school. So those are all things which are not related to improving somebody's IQ score, but are still really important skills for them to learn. And so we think that maybe the reason why a program like Head Start has a positive effect over the long term is that you're affecting those types of skills, which are also really important for success in life.
For your recent survey article, you looked at a wide range of research on the subject of early life conditions and later life outcomes. Were there any surprises when you looked at the evidence?
Well, I think one of the most surprising things in the literature is this idea that things that happen in the womb are really important to future life outcomes. So, for example, there's been some recent studies showing that women who had the flu when they were pregnant have babies that are lower birth weight, but also that those babies grow up to have lower wages. And you can see that by looking in these, for example, in Scandinavian countries where you can follow people in administrative data over a very long period of time. And the reason why that's surprising is we think of the flu as something pretty minor and common, and for it to be having fairly large effects suggests that there are many other things like that, maybe other infectious diseases, which could also be having negative effects on people over the long term.
So on the specific issue of the potential effects of getting the flu while pregnant, what's the implication for policy?
For flu, we have a flu shot, which normally is pretty effective at preventing the disease. Most pregnant women don't get it. Most of them are getting prenatal care, and they're not getting a flu shot.
So women in poverty have access to Medicaid, and most are getting prenatal care. So it's less of an issue of access to care and more of an issue of getting the right care.
It's getting the right care, and I think that's the issue, yeah. Same with nutrition, right? There's lots of people who are not very well nourished. There's lots of doctors who never even ask people very much about what they eat. And actually, a lot of the stuff that might be helpful is not necessarily something that doctors are very well set up to do. So I think, you know, I had two kids. When I had my own prenatal care, you go there, they weigh you all the time. They say, well, you know, are you eating healthy? And you say yes, and that's it. That's all the discussion you have with the doctor about that. So in contrast, something like WIC, you have to have nutrition education, and somebody talks to you about the nitty-gritty of what you're actually eating, you know, how many servings of vegetables, how many servings of fruit. And it's not a doctor who does that, probably. It's probably somebody like a nutrition education person.
So is it fair to say then that prenatal care can often be quite basic care? In other words, the care that you get in a doctor's office, but that these supplementary services like WIC provide education and more personalized care that can further benefit health?
Yeah, that's what I think. And the home visitors as well. So home visitors are often nurses. They go to somebody's home, they look at what's going on in the home, and then they offer advice about things that they think are important to change. And again, that's, you wouldn't really get that kind of personal attention from a doctor in a clinic.
Shifting gears slightly, you also have advice to practitioners or policymakers about implementing evidence-based early life interventions in a way that's most likely to generate positive results. Tell us about that.
I think what happens is that people take evidence that a certain policy is effective, and then they use it without enough concern about fidelity to the model that was actually shown to be effective. So the details matter. You know, what sort of person do you need to hire to do this? What sort of qualifications do they have to have? What intensity does the program have to work? Those are all important kinds of details to pay attention to. So, for example, with home visiting programs, I mentioned home visiting programs that have nurses. Those have a pretty good track record. Other models would involve doing something like hiring a community worker. So the idea would be, well, here's a mother that's well-respected in her particular community. Let's hire her to go around and talk to the other mothers. Those programs actually don't have the same track record and aren't necessarily as acceptable to the people being visited. Similarly, social workers, a difference with nurses is that people want to have a nurse come and see their child. You don't necessarily want to have a social worker come and see your child because you might think that that's going to lead to intervention by Child Protective Services or something like that.
And in addition to that advice about fidelity to the model, any other pieces of advice for practitioners or policymakers?
So one of the issues with policymakers is that they often fall into the rhetoric of saying, you know, none of the existing programs are working, we still have lots of problems, we still have lots of poor people, and so what we really need to do is develop some completely different approach. And what I would say to that is that there are a lot of programs that are working very well, that have been shown to be cost-effective, and that it would be a good idea to expand those things that we know are working. And as I mentioned, a program like WIC, I think, is very effective. It doesn't involve a large benefit, so it might be a benefit that's worth something like $40 a month to the household, but it's a very well-targeted benefit and does make a difference.
We'll end this portion of the interview here, but the conversation will continue. I'm going to ask Janet where the most important gaps are in terms of our current knowledge and in terms of research needs, and I'll post her answer to the blog. But for now, Janet Curry from Princeton University, thanks for sharing some of your insights with us.
Oh, you're very welcome.